Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're getting back into the world of fintech, financial technology, with one of the JSE's listed financial technology players, that is Lesaka Technologies. And they've just, on the day of recording, which is the 6th of February, they have just reported their second quarter earnings. Some people refer to them as half-year earnings, and one of the things that they are celebrating with that particular set of results is 10 consecutive quarters of delivering on their earnings guidance. They've firmed up guidance for the full year 2025 and also for the upcoming year. So it seems to be lots of good news, but a couple of things here and there, because we're still operating at a net loss, and we are joined by CEO Lincoln Mali to give us a fuller picture of what's going on. Lincoln, greetings to you today.
Thank you, Mudiwa. Thank you for having us.
All right, so you've just heard me giving, top level of, how someone like me is reading your earnings report. But, your opportunity to, maybe give us a fuller sense of what's going on, saying that against the backdrop of, I just noted in this particular earnings release that there was less commentary than you typically provide, so just keen to get your fuller sense of what's going on.
Thank you. I think as somebody who's followed our story, it's humbling to think back to, financial year 2021, where we recorded a loss of more than 500 million that we can project now into the future and give guidance to the market of a financial year 2026 profit of 1.35 billion. Just give you a swing of a turnaround we've been involved in, and you've walked with us on this journey. And over the last while, we've been delivering on the guidance we've given to the market. And we're very proud that this is the 10th time in a row that we've been able to give, the market news that we've been able to make the expectations. The second thing I'd like to say is that we've been able to give guidance to the market that we are reaffirming our guidance for the full year of 2025 for an EBITDA number of 900 million to a billion, and that we are able to give guidance into 2026 for a midpoint of 1.35 billion. So these are difficult times. Running a business in tough economic times, tough competitive times, but we've been able to say that we've moved this business from a loss-making business to a high-growth business. And that really is credit to our teams who've rallied behind the call of growing this business both organically and inorganically.
One of the things to note from your earnings release is the fact that there was obviously an adjustment that had to be made on MobiQuick that puts you guys into a net loss position. That's a non-operating and non-cash change in fair value there, but for the investing public, sometimes you also want to just understand, because what people see is a net loss, and they might want to understand, well, Lincoln is saying all these nice things, but I'm seeing a net loss here. How should people be reading into that?
I think the best way to read it is it's a point in time. For a while, we've been carrying in our balance sheet the MobiQuick asset. We've always said that it was non-core, that at the right time, we'll be able to find a way of exiting that investment. So we had evaluated it at the time on a cost plus or minus changes in observable equity securities at 1.31 billion rands. And when we followed the progress that it was making as a business, then when it was ready to list in India, they were able to list. From the listing, we were now able to see that the actual value from the last quarter quarter end, the carrying value is less than what we had put on our books. And that carrying value is 802 million. So that's where what that is. But I would also say, also look at what the possibilities are. Now that it is now a fairly traded security in the open market, within 6 months, we will be able, in a responsible manner, to exit that transaction, you know, and then be able to either reinvest or pay down debt. So the way I would look at it to say, yes, it's an event that has happened at a point in time, but it unlocks a number of opportunities for us because, again, nobody really knew what that value is. Now we have a tangible value and we're able to release, certain value out of it when we're able to dispose of the asset in a responsible manner at the right time.
I like the fact that we're talking about MobiQuick because, that's something that, you know, like you said, is earmarked for sale. Your mergers and acquisitions team clearly is very busy because there's a lot of deal action and deal flow that is in and out of the Lesaka stable. Over the last, I'm going to call it year, 2 years, we've been seeing more of acquisition action as opposed to sales and that type of thing. I think some of the last asset sales were probably all of the European stuff, the Bank Freak, all of that stuff that was, the previous, I'm just going to call it from the previous regime, right? But one of the things I really wanted to chat to you about, Lincoln, for today is when it comes to that deal flow and that deal action, there have been lots of deals announced, the biggest one obviously being Connect, the Connect Group, and then we've had TouchSides. We've had Adumo, and yes, most recently we've also had Recharger. How are you guys dealing with with the integration part of it? Because when you are an acquisitive business, one of the biggest risks that comes with buying up so many businesses and growing acquisitively is integration. We've seen it, really big disasters in the world, AOL, Time Warner, all of these, big things that happen internationally where the deal collapses, not because it didn't make financial sense, but because culturally and operationally, bringing two different entities together, isn't always well thought out, well executed. But in your particular case, it's a number of different entities all coming together, under the Lesaka banner. So maybe you could just talk to us a little bit around how you guys have gone about and, go about your integration piece.
I think the first thing is we have a very robust Capcom. So the deals themselves have to make commercial sense. That's important upfront. Secondly, as we're thinking about it, the synergies and integrations are built into the approvals that our Capcom would give, which then give us KPIs as leaders to ensure that we follow through on what we said when we were buying the deal. So that's probably the first part. The second part is that the way we've organized ourselves is that we have leaders whose responsibilities are to run the P&Ls of the different divisions that they are responsible for. So they are not distracted by possible acquisitions. They are focused on their businesses and will only bring possible acquisitions if they make sense in their P&L. And we then will evaluate them as a team and then be able to go to Capcom. The third thing is that in the core team at the head office, besides the four executives who run the P&Ls, you have Ali, who obviously sets a strategy and is a visionary and drives the vision of the business and what will we acquire and why. My responsibility is on the people and culture. My responsibility is to pull together all of these businesses within the values of Lesaka, within the ethos of Lesaka, and to what we're trying to do. That really is what I'm trying to do in my role. Then we have Naeem. Naeem, who used to be our CFO, is now our Chief Operating Officer. His role is to drive the actual synergies that say, hey guys, we are hosting five websites, using five different vendors. Let's have one vendor at a better price. Oh guys, we've got six leases. Let's get two leases and sort of that. Let's rationalize. Oh guys, there's duplication here and so on. And then there's Dan, obviously CFO, who makes sure that in those integrations, we are bringing the cost down, we are managing that. So we are driving those efficiencies. And then obviously we'll report to the board as to the progress that we make. So you'll start to see some of those things coming through in the comments that we're giving to the market about the focus on efficiency, the focus on avoiding duplication, and most importantly, that we're trying to build a platform. In this platform, we want it to be customer-centric. So the different product houses only exist to serve a customer. So we want to make sure that we don't become a product-driven organization with silos. We become a multi-product or a multi-solution business that serves a number of segments through unique solutions. That drives integration. That drives people doing things across traditional boundaries. So you'll start to see that work coming through. So we don't think that any large entity that we'll have or acquire might result in some of the challenges that you've mentioned. If I could just maybe end off by giving an example with Paul. Paul was the CEO for Adumo. When we were looking to acquire the business, we looked a lot at culture. We looked at the people. Could there be a fit? Paul also, I'm sure, would assess us in the same way. As we started getting together, we built an integration team together with Paul and Steve, who obviously drives our M&A. And then now there are clear plans. Guys, which markets are we going to attack? Guys, which clients are we going to attack? Which bundle of products are we going to put there? What office are we going to pull together? Which teams are we going to pull together? All of that work is coming through. And probably in the next two quarters, some of that work will come about. Let's also accept that it's not easy in the sense that sometimes there are people involved. Sometimes there are careers involved. Sometimes there are people's passion points involved. Part of our responsibility as a leadership team is to make people to see the why and then galvanize them to do that. So we're very aware of the possibilities of getting it wrong, but it's very important for us not to do acquisitions for ego and make sure that we manage them and integrate them. And the Connect group is one of those where you probably will not know now who was in which area. When you see Steve, people will forget that he was the CEO of the Connect Group. They acquired Kazang before we have what we have. So that's why sometimes when people want to take us back to what the original thing looked like, it's very difficult because you can't unscramble the egg. Because when those entities come in, we integrate them into the existing structures.
All right. Yeah, no, it's a very interesting point because lots of companies want to do deals, but I honestly think that sometimes the execution, on the integration piece leaves a lot to be, a lot to be desired. And, you see the legacy of that a couple of years later. To your earlier point, that you can't unscramble the egg. And if you don't scramble the egg in the right way, down the line, you're not going to have, a good omelet or whatever it is. If I just maybe come back to where we are, because the acquisitions have mainly been in the merchant business. I know that, from talking to you in the past, the consumer business is what you've, been looking after, looking out for. We also see it in the results that your merchant business continues to be, the big driver for the business. But then, you're seeing good growth when it comes to the consumer piece. Let's start with the consumer division. How are you feeling, about that one? And where are we when it comes to number of consumers? I would believe it's 1.5.
We are now on 1.8 million.
1.8, okay, okay.
1.8 million customers. You know, when you think back to where this business comes from, it was a loss-making business. It was burning cash. Now we are sitting at 1.8 million customers. Of that 1.8 million customers, 1.6 would be in the EPE base, which is the grant community, where we have 12% market share. And now we've got 200,000 that come from the Adumo payouts, which is why I talk about the difficulty sometimes to unscramble the egg. So now you've got 1.8 million customers. Even within that 1.8, you could say 1.4 million customers are permanent grant beneficiaries. Then 200,000 or so are SRDs, and then the other 200,000 would be Adumo payouts. And we've seen very nice growth from this business. You know, net revenue up 31% to 411. Segment adjusted EBITDA very nicely up at 61% up to 77 million rands. So good growth in the transaction account growth. So accounts are growing. We're getting more customers. Very good growth in loan growth, where we're now seeing that we're able to extend more credit to our customers, and very growth in the insurance. And the ARPU is growing in that business. So I think that that business has still got a lot of room for growth. I think you and I have spoken about this before, to say we're only penetrated 43% in our base from a lending point of view, which means we've got more runway, and we're penetrated about 35% from an insurance point of view, which means we've got lots of runway, and we're only 12% of that grant a market of 12 million customers, which means we can still bring on more customers into the base. So, and we have an opportunity to extend our products. We are extending value-added services or alternative digital payments to that customer base, and relooking at some of the loans, like extending the loan to 4,000 rands instead of 2,000 rands. 2,000 rands in the past over 6 months, now 4,000 rands over 9 months. And then extending for insurance for people to cover more beneficiaries, up to 6 beneficiaries. So all of these are changes that we're making on the value proposition for the client. Going forward, obviously, we'd like to think about customers beyond the social grant space and see pockets of underserved customers that we can focus on. So when it comes to that consumer business, as I say, we still have lots of room to run. We will always be looking about possibilities of inorganic growth in that space. If something comes along that adds us, gives us more scale, more solution set, or better geographical reach, we'll consider it. But we think that there's still a lot of room for this business. Coming to the merchant business, which now has got the old Connect Group, the old Kazang business, and the Adumo business. This now is a very significant part of our group. Net revenue there is up 68% to 854 million rands. And then segment adjusted EBITDA is up 32% to 185 million. So again, we see that in this space, our competitive advantage is not on each individual product. It's not on a price war. What we offer is what very few other players in this market can offer. We can offer a merchant, whether formal or informal, cash solutions. We can offer them lending for working capital or lending for growth in their business. Three, we can offer them value-added services or alternative digital payments mechanism. We can offer them integrated system, with GAP, where we are strongest in the hospitality sector, with our systems there. And then we can also offer data monetization services. And so all of these things give us a big edge over our competitors. And this is where your earlier question about integration is key. we can get a lot of synergies in putting teams together and all of those things. But it's assembling a solution set from your product menu to give to a client without trying to make maximum profit on an individual product. Once you have that solution set, you can get better margins, you can have more stickiness with the client, and you can give better service to the client. And that's what we're looking at as a business.
All right. I think where we can end off for today, Lincoln, is to maybe talk about just zooming in on the consumer business, because we've spoken in quite good detail about what's happening in the merchant business, especially when we spoke about the different deals and integration. When it comes to the consumer business, it's two questions. Firstly, when you look at the fintech landscape, one of the things that fintechs are really able to do is to do one thing really well and beat out everyone else, especially, you know, the banks. They'll have one particular solution and they'll do that thing really well. As Lesaka, you have a portfolio of solutions. And, you know, there've been a lot of conversations about whether at the end of the day, EPE is a bank or, you know, whether it's basically a mobile wallet type of solution, not mobile wallet, but a digital wallet of some sort that, you know, is having a number of different products added on top of it. So what's your comment on that part? Is EPE a bank? And then I think the last one is just around, in terms of growing that particular business, from that 1.8 million and attacking the 12 million total addressable market even more, what are you fighting against? Are you fighting against competitors, or do you fight against maybe consumer behavior? That there's just a set ingrained way in which people are used to transacting, withdrawing money and that type of thing. And you sort of have to maybe push through that barrier before you can actually supercharge your acquisition strategy even more. Yeah.
So let me start with the first question. For us, we want to build the EPE as a platform, because we don't want to just think of the product. We want to think of the platform. When you enter this platform called EasyPay Everywhere, you are now opening up to access credit. And nobody else can give you credit who's a registered financial institution like we do. We're the biggest lender in that space, and we're the cheapest lender in that space. Through, again, that same platform, you can access our loans, right? And through that same platform, you can access, alternative digital payments or various services. And in future, we can give you possible loyalty and things of that sort. That for us is important, because within that is linked your other question, where behavioral things we're able to build into that. What do I mean? Instead of going to the branch to go check, or the ATM to check whether you have your grant, just look at your phone. It will tell you you've got your grant. Two, instead of going to the branch to go and borrow money, borrow the money from your phone. Get to buy your insurance from your phone or call our call center. All of these things are built on that platform. And we want to give that platform to this underserved consumer base. If, as we prove this and we're proving it well, why can't we use it to other consumers? We now have 200,000 consumers who are coming from their Adumo payout stable. They come through us through a large corporate, like a mine, which will give incentives for safety or anything. So now, why can't we give those same clients a digital access to their money, digital view of their money, and access to the products that we have? That's where we now start to move away from just being so focused on social grants. We are focused on underserved communities wherever they may be. Coming to your second point, I think that we're trying to do both. We have customers who have been moving from the post office over the last while. Those customers continue to move from the post office, and we are growing faster than other organizations in acquiring those clients. We think that will continue because our value proposition is more richer than other clients. Secondly, we are going to get clients that are in the other financial institution but realize they only just have a transactional account. There's no value proposition for them. And we can show them the richness of our value proposition. And I think that they could see that. Thirdly, the work we've done on our team, on our technology, the fact that we can open an account using a digital device in minutes, the fact that we can go and do home services, the fact that we can go to a township or a village and open accounts en masse, these are competitive things that we have where we are fighting with the competition. I'll then come to the last piece of what you were asking. We do need societal change and impact. And that societal change and impact relies on two things that feed off one another. Well, three things that feed off one another. The one is consumer education, to show people viable alternatives to cash. Not preach about the evils of cash, show people viable digital alternatives. And when they see them, they will use. The other one is a regulatory change. The fact that the Reserve Bank has now announced that they will make an exemption from the Banks Act for designated entities on the basis of the activities that they do, that now non-bank players like Lesaka can settle and clear without needing a bank. That's a huge, huge change, because that will open up for innovation. It will open up for disruption and lower the cost of transactions. And so the third thing is solutions that are customer-driven. This now means all organizations will now start to have to think, how do we bring those customers into the digital economy in a way that makes sense for them? So we see our biggest competition as being inefficiency. Our biggest competition is underdevelopment. Our biggest competition is lack of access. And so that's why we're able to compete on our own, yet collaborate with other fintechs, because we think that the changes that will be made will be beneficial for society and beneficial for the industry, as has happened in Latin America, as has happened in India.
All right. And on that note, you know, where we are teaching about the value of digital payments as opposed to preaching the wrongs of cash, we come to the end of today's discussion, just talking about Lesaka's latest earnings report, 10 consecutive quarters of delivering on guidance, firming up full year 2020-25's earnings guidance, as well as the one for 2026. And, Lincoln just saying that things are looking good, in the business, and especially when it comes to the acquisitions that they've been making. We spent quite a bit of time talking about what it means to integrate all of those businesses, how to make sure that things are done in the correct way, so that you can actually grow as opposed to continue being hamstrung by the headaches that come with bringing different organizations, their cultures, their people, all together than one place. And then, spending time in the end, they're just talking about the consumer business, what it's going to take to grow that particular unit, currently sitting at 1.8 million, customers with the market currently of 12 million. And some of the things that Lincoln is talking about, consumer education, also making sure that you've got the regulatory piece that is sorted out. And then, also at the same time, letting people know and understand that there is value in transacting on a digital basis. So that's been it. We were in discussion with Lincoln Mali. He is the CEO of Lesaka Technologies. Lincoln, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, my brother. Appreciate it.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.